Call the Senate Education Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 12th, 2018. The time is 8 a.m. In attendance are myself, Senator Stephen Schering, Senator Hughes, Senator Coghill, Senator Begich, Senator Giesel. So we have a quorum to conduct business. Today we're going to take up Senate Bill 171 relating to child abuse, training programs, and Breeze Law. This is the first hearing on the bill, of course, but not particularly on this issue. So it's my intent today to hear from the bill sponsor, the agencies, the stakeholders, to get a brief summary of what the bill does. We'll take some public testimony, entertain questions, discussion on the bill, and hold it until for further review. Any questions or comments from members of the committee before we start? Okay. Then I call up the Department of Education, Commissioner Dr. Michael Johnson, Deputy Commissioner Karen Forrest, if you'd come to the table, and who's leading off? Thank you. Dr. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Stevens and committee. For the record, my name is Michael Johnson, and I am the commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Service. No, for...
I could hang around.
Yeah.
You could do both.
Excuse me. I'll start over. I apologize. My name is Michael Johnson, and I'm the commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development, and I have with me Karen Forrest, the deputy commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. And she'll be speaking in just a minute. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to visit with you today. I also want to acknowledge in the room from DEED, Deputy Commissioner Shanna Eford, Legislative Liaison Marcy Herman, Director of Educator and School Excellence Bob Williams, Manager of Health and Safety Todd Brocious, and some of them will be coming up in a few moments to walk through the sectional. So, I'm here today to talk about Senate Bill 171 regarding training to support the safety and well-being of our children. Over the past year, I have benefited from the input of hundreds of Alaskans, including legislators, regarding the public education system. One of the most prominent and repeated aspects of that input is a concern for the safety and well-being of our children. Parents, educators, community members, and even students themselves sense the evolving threat that face our children as they mature. Senate Bill 171 recognizes the fact that we must be vigilant in our awareness of those threats and equip ourselves to defeat them. I'll briefly mention a few elements of the bill, and then my colleague will also address additional elements of the bill from the perspective of the Department of Health and Social Services. The bill logically connects mandatory reporting with mandatory training. As we require certain groups of people to report, this bill ensures that they are equipped to do that reporting with adequate training. The bill also updates existing training to include training related to grooming behaviors that are common in abusive situations. The bill recognizes that as we learn more about the tragic circumstances that lead to abuse, our training should reflect that awareness. And the bill recognizes that crisis response training saves lives. It includes a return to the annual training routine rather than the potential of going 1, 2, or even more years with no collective crisis response training. So now I'll turn it over to my colleague who will walk through the sectional from the perspective of the Department of Health and Social Services.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Forrest, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you for hearing this legislation. Commissioner Johnson has already touched on the reasons why this bill is important for children, their parents, and the education community. I'm here to briefly share with you why this bill is important for others who also work with children. These include practitioners of the healing arts, such as mental health counselors, nurses, doctors, dentists, etc., child care providers, and others, including peace officers, who are already mandatory reporters of child abuse and neglect under Alaska law. This bill would ensure that those individuals who are already mandatory reporters would receive training so that they are well informed on the signs and symptoms of child abuse and neglect and on the procedures for reporting. As you know, child abuse and neglect are important safety concerns in Alaska and a high priority to address. We know that the more adverse childhood experiences children have, the greater their chances of having health, mental health, substance abuse problems as they grow up. also these children do sometimes cross over into the juvenile justice system. We need to be able to identify those children and families who need services and be able to connect them to resources. Earlier intervention is less expensive in the long run and more likely to lead to better outcomes for children and families. Senate Bill 171 would require that all mandatory reporters, not just state staff and educators, have access to and receive training so that they fully understand their obligation to report and know how to report under Alaska law. This bill would require Department of Health and Social Services to make an online training and curriculum available to the public at no cost on the department's website, to maintain a database that tracks utilization of the training, including a person's name, as well as their date of training. It would allow training participants to print a certificate of completion, and it also would require annually that the department inform licensed child care providers how to access the training by posting information on our website and on the Alaska Online Public Notice System. The impact of this bill to the Department of Health and Social Services is minimal. We already offer a training and curriculum on child abuse and neglect reporting on the Office of Children's Services website. The training platform has the capacity to have a database with record-keeping abilities. And Senate Bill 171 would require minimal changes to this training platform. Currently, the training website has a maximum capacity of 10,000 users, and we're currently using about 25% of that capacity. The training platform is federally funded. This training requirement would help ensure that children who are abused and neglected are identified and help is provided to them as early as possible. Keeping children safe is an important public safety concern for Alaskans, and ensuring that all mandatory reporters have training is a step towards that endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Forrest. A couple of questions. I guess my first question, and maybe we'll deal with this when we get to the end of the bill, but in the introduction, it talks about disclosure of substantiated allegations of sexual abuse. I'm not sure what that means, substantiated, and substantiated, and I guess, you know, shouldn't there be a way, if there's just a suspicion, does that not go under substantiated? Does that include a suspicion?
Right. Anyone who has a suspicion that child abuse or neglect has occurred has a duty to report. The mandatory reporters have a duty to report suspicion. And then the Office of Children's Services investigates, decides whether that that report rises to the level of needing an investigation, and then they take action to either substantiate or not review that particular report of harm.
So, so that's the second step the department looks at, and that would be the substantiated allegation.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions? My daughter's a psychologist, and she deals with this issue a lot, and with her clients, and so I hear about it a lot. And so I think it's been quite interesting to hear what you're thinking. But grooming is something is a phrase I'm not familiar with, and I think of family members I know who are involved in big sisters, big brothers. I mean, how do we differentiate between legitimate people working with children and those grooming issues? Maybe you can define that for us.
Mr. Chair, grooming is more along the lines of trying to engage a youth or a child in a inappropriate kind of relationship, relate a sexual or romantic kind of relationship. So it would be those kinds of behaviors that would gear the child to be able to want to have that kind of relationship with you, which would be different than what we would expect from those who are seeking employment at Big Brother or volunteering at Big Brother's Big Sisters. Although, of course, sometimes, you know, if we have those concerns on those, that has to be reported.
Okay, thank you. Senator Begich, and then Senator Hughes.
This might be for the Commissioner Johnson, I'm not sure. We did receive, all of us received a note over the weekend from one school district that was asking the question, is this mandating something new that would be done to parents? I wrote back and said, no, it's mandating some very specific language. The grooming issue brings this up to me, but it mandates very specific training pieces for what we already do, and then changes the frequency of that. Is that, would that be a correct Did I make a mistake in saying that to that particular person, or is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I don't think you made a mistake, particularly regarding the grooming behavior. We already offer training to school district employees regarding child abuse prevention, and this would be an element that's added to that current training so that the training we already have will now include what we know about grooming behaviors.
Just a very brief follow-up.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then just to reinforce something that I've said earlier, this also fits into one of your three categories of the education challenges you mentioned at the beginning. Would you mind just drawing that connection a little tighter for us, please?
Yeah. For sure. Through the chair, Senator Begich, as I said at the beginning, one of the repeated narratives that came out of all the input that we've received over the last year, both in ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act development process, and the Alaska Education Challenge, is parents want to know that their students are safe and well while they're at school. And this certainly addresses that and acknowledges that we can never assume that we've accomplished that. We always have to be vigilant. Yes, thank you. And we have to keep updating our training to address current needs. So, thank you.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner. And this is great follow-up to Senator Begich's question, because in the sponsor statement, I was a bit confused because in the fourth paragraph, it talks about expanding the existing requirement for teachers and parents to receive training. But we're not requiring all parents to receive training, based on just what we were discussing. But I would like to know, I guess I realize I don't know, when I was looking for the backup documents, I've known that in the school district we have mandatory reporting. But who else are the mandatory reporters? Because now we're expanding the requirement for training to all, and I'm guessing people that work in agencies that deal with children. But could you just go, so we all have an understanding of who we are now expanding the training requirement to, please?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, currently training is required by statute for state staff and educators. And so what this bill does is expand the training requirement to other mandatory reporters. It's those other mandatory reporters who are already required to report include practitioners of the healing arts. And that group is a broad group of people. It includes athletic trainers, chiropractors, mental health counselors, social workers, dental hygienists, psychologists, physicians, et cetera. It's a long group of people. In addition to the practitioners of healing arts, peace officers and officers of the Department of Correction, child care providers, paid employees of domestic violence and sexual assault programs, et cetera. So there's a long list in statute of mandatory reporters. However, currently right now, state staff and educators are the only groups that are required to have training. So this expands the training option requirement to the other mandatory reporters.
And I have a follow-up to that, because that really, that covers that a lot of Alaskans now will have a new requirement. So I want to better understand. I was reading in the bill where if an employer provides training that is up to par with what the department would provide, that would be acceptable. Question is the department going to be reviewing what the employer might provide in lieu of what the department is offering online? Or just trust it?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's not a requirement of this legislation.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
So the department will not, if employer says we are providing adequate training, you'll just accept it then? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the department is required to provide the training and make it available to the public.
Follow up? Yes, I'm aware of that, but there's also part of the bill where if an employer chooses to provide it, that is an option as long as it meets the quality of what the department is providing. So my question is if the employer chooses to provide their own training, is there any check by the department on that training?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, not that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As someone who is licensed under DCCED, as I read Section 9, which is the section we're referring to right now, this appears to be annually mandated continuing education credits for clinicians. And I read on page 8, beginning on line 5, that this bill would allow substitution of these credits for other continuing education credits that are required under, I'll use myself as an example, my own licensing. I would point out that my license is renewed every 2 years, and every 2 years my regulatory board reviews those credits and determines whether I comply with the continued competency. How are you going to enforce or evaluate compliance with an annual mandatory continuing education?
Through the chair, Senator Geisel, the bill is not requiring the Department of Health and Social Services to monitor compliance.
Yes, please, Senator.
Thank you. I do understand that. However, it is requiring the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to do such a thing. Perhaps that's the department I need to ask the question of. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Begich.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Geisel's question brings to mind then, why is it a zero fiscal note? Because if there's some level of requirement, so I think we need to get an answer from DCED as to how they plan to enforce a mandatory I like the idea of the bill, but, you know, if it's not really a zero fiscal note, we ought to know that. I think that gets right to the point of some of what I just heard. So,
good point. We'll follow up on that.
Also, and perhaps I missed it, but if we're requiring this and a person does not comply, is then the department that is issuing the licenses are, I don't see anything in here that says the person couldn't get their license. Is that the underlying penalty for not taking the training? And because I'm not seeing it in the bill. And it, which would go back to Senator Geisel's question, they'd have to be reviewing. What I see in the bill is the DCCED has to inform those professionals that they have to get the training, but I'm not seeing where they have to go back and check and then not issue licenses if they don't.
Any response, Ms. Farris?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, so it's certainly no secret, it's been in the newspapers about the Catholic Church moving priests, abusive priests from church to church. How do we protect that in the school districts for moving someone who's been abusive, an employee, from one school to another?
Chair Stevens, there's a section in the bill that my colleagues will walk through in just a moment that addresses that by providing a measure of protection if you're called for a reference and you disclose that there's been a history of abuse or substantiated claims of against the person.
Very good. I'll look forward to talking about that in the sectional. Senator Begich?
Just one last point that I wanted to make is that to thank the sponsors for the act of naming it Breeze Law, which we know Cindy and Butch Moore's story, and there's separate legislation that Senator Costello has introduced relating to the naming of Breeze Law. So I just wanted to put on the record a thank you to both of you, as well as the governor, for putting that in this legislation.
Thank you. Further questions? If not, let's go on to the sectional analysis, and I believe Commissioner is going to be Todd Brocious and Marcy Herman, is that right?
And Director Bob Williams.
And Bob Williams, yes. Please come forward if you would.
Good
Come on, we want to put Marcy under the hot seat.
Todd doesn't look quite like me, but he'll
be better. Okay,
thank you. Hello, I'm Bob Williams, Director of Educator and School Excellence.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Todd Brocious. I'm the School Health and Safety Education Administrator at the department.
Thank you very much. If we could go through the sectional then.
Absolutely. Senate Bill 171 expands protections for Alaska's children from school crisis, child abuse, neglect, and dating violence, with an emphasis on expanded protections against child sexual predation abuse. We'll kind of go section through section on how that's changed. In Section 1, seeks to rename portions of the Alaska Safe Children's Act. Alaska Statute 1430-355, Sexual Abuse and Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention, it will be known as the Alaska Safe Children's Act. And Alaska Statute 1430-356, Dating Violence and Abuse Policy Training, Awareness, Prevention, and Notices shall be known as Breeze Law. So that section is just changing those names. Section 2 clarifies the reporting responsibilities for clergy members. And Section 3 amends Alaska Statute 965-160, immunity for good health and disclosure for job performance.
Yes, Senator has a question.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I don't mean to interrupt the sectional, but you just spoke about Section 2, something about clergy, and this is actually a section referring to marital and family therapists under DCCED. Could you clarify?
Yeah, good point. Thank you, Senator. Are we misunderstanding that? Section 2 says specifically, looking at your sectional analysis, we're talking about Board of Marital and Family Therapy licensing.
I'll pass it
through the board. Senator Giesel, I believe this section is referring to an exclusion for clergy members. I'm sorry. Again, for the record, my name is Todd Brocious. I'm a School Health and Safety Education Administrator at the department. So I believe this section is clarifying the exclusion for clergy members from the new training that would be required under 4717021, that for all mandated reporters would require that they receive training on mandated child abuse and neglect.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask the department to please review your sectional and this section of the bill. 0863, I believe, is the chapter that refers to marital and family therapists. Mm-hmm. And I would like more illumination on how clergy are included when the statement on page 2, line 10 says required training relating to the licensees under marital and family therapy.
Sorry, so what line is that, Senator?
I'm on page 2, line 10, and it refers to the required training, but this is all under marital and family therapy. So just asking if you could review that and maybe get back to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. And just so we know, we can't require clergy. We're giving an exclusion to clergy because it's not within our scope of responsibility to require clergy to be trained.
I believe that section is stating that clergy are excluded from mandated reporting to some degree.
And why would we do that?
That's outside the purview of the Department of Education. I'm sorry, I can't speak directly to that.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Senator Baggage.
Mr. Chairman, I usually come prepared to ask good questions and that kind of thing. And I admire the work of virtually everyone who's here and going to come up here. But are the presenters prepared to present this bill? I think I need to ask that question, and I'm not sure that they are. I'm hearing misunderstandings about the commerce and economic development. I'm struck because I can read a bill. I've written bills. I don't understand that section, and I don't mean to. I'm not trying to do damage to this piece of legislation, but I want to know what it says. And I think we have an obligation as a committee to ensure that the people presenting to us are prepared to discuss it. So I'm not sure we're ready for this bill, and I just want to put that on the table. And I don't think I've ever said anything like that in committee yet. So,
thank you, Senator Begich. And no disrespect at all. If more time.
No disrespect, man.
Take more time. No problem at all. And if you'd identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Stacey Crayley, Chief Assistant Attorney General at the Department of Law. Just to clarify, and I think there's just, you know, trying to keep track of everything in different versions and that sort of thing, but Senator Giesel, you are correct. Section 2 does deal with licensed marital and family therapists. What this particular section does is it makes a specific reference on page 2, line 10. Yeah, looking at the bill, just so to understand. So in the current statute under occupational licensing for that, for licensed family and marital therapists, I think, is that right? Family, marital, okay. I tend to switch those around when I talk fast. There is a specific reference to 4717020, which is the existing statute dealing with mandatory reporters. The amendment on line 10 further references 4717021, which is the mandatory education section. So what's very interesting is when you look at the occupational licensing statute, the only place where mandatory reporting is specifically referenced in state law is in this section for marital and family therapists, not for any other providers. Each board deals with their mandatory reporting requirements through regulation or through whatever, you know, policy they have. This is the only place it is. We felt that when we were amending the training to make it mandatory, we had to make that cross-reference. So that's what this section does. It just clarifies that because it's referenced in the statute, we needed to reference the training. So it does address what is required of family and marital therapists.
I appreciate you clarifying that. However, the statement was made that this somehow exempts or affects clergy. And that's where I'm not seeing the connection.
This section has nothing to do with the clergy. And I do believe...
Do you have a copy of
020? I was trying to find the list of... I don't... Oh, thank you. When you look at the requirements of through the chair, Senator Giesel, the individuals who are required to report under 4717020, and you look at the list on that, there is no requirement in current state law that individuals who are clergy or members of a religious organization to be mandatory reporters. There's no legal requirement for that at this time. And we have not amended 4717020 to address that, to add them.
And
yes,
how are you seeing them added here?
They are
with 021. That's the bolded, underlined.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, they are not added through 021. They are not added, and Section 2 has nothing to do with clergy. Nothing to do with clergy.
Exempted. Or not.
They remain exempted, is what you're saying, because they never have been included. Is that what you're saying?
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Well, an important issue, and I believe it needs to be addressed at some point, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One, you asked a question directly regarding clergy earlier. You brought up the Catholic Church thing, which is something I'm actually. Has been an issue for me for literally almost a decade now, and so I'm assuming then that Director Williams misspoke about the clergy comment. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I believe so. I think it was just a bit of confusion, but Section 2 does not address the clergy in any way, shape, or form.
So let me follow that up, though, and in both in terms of the questions that have been put on the table, is there something in here that, because I frankly would like clergy to be included, so is there something in this bill that would include clergy that we are not aware of that we should be aware of?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, at this point there are no, we have not included the clergy or made any amendments to who is required to be a mandatory reporter. All this bill does is address those who are currently listed in state statute that has been decided by the legislature who are mandatory reporters, that they have to have this additional mandatory training. This is the purpose of the bill is to require mandatory training for those who are already identified as mandatory reporters.
Brief follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I can be reassured that we will understand what the bill does by the time we're done here, and that for whatever reason, and I shouldn't say reassured, but it doesn't address clergy. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that is correct.
But could it address clergy?
Through the chair, I believe that is a conversation that the committee can have with the administration about whether or not they should be included as mandatory reporters. But at this time, that wasn't the purpose of this bill.
Oh, thank you. And if you're comfortable, I'll ask Tim to work with the department and see if there's a CS that we need to include that. Are you comfortable with that?
I think, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Section 3, though, which says if you have, in fact, the Section 3, which relates to disclosing information on a current or former employee, gets to your question regarding substantial accusations of sexual abuse, would in fact properly and appropriately address the behavior that occurred in our own archdiocese, where people were sent to villages that were knowingly sexual abusers. It would address that, I think, in Section 3. Would that not be correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, Section 3 is an immunity provision under Title 9 of the Alaska Statutes, and it's a provision which does address the idea that if you provide information to a prospective employer, that there is immunity from disclosing information that that is identified in here in terms of an individual who is. But it's limited to an educational facility. So I don't believe it would identify I don't think it would apply to the scenario you have identified. Section 3 is limited to immunity for purposes of telling a future school district that an employee who was working at your school district had engaged in some inappropriate behavior, and therefore you may want to think about whether or not you want to hire them to work in your school district. There's immunity for that.
So Stacey, would you give this some thought? I think I'm speaking for the entire committee that we would like to see. We're not happy with having the clergy excluded. Is that true? Yeah. So would you give this a thought?
We'll take that back. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes.
And as part of that, Mr. Chair, I'd also like to know the history of why clergy was excluded. Perhaps there was some reason that would be helpful for us to know, and so I think that needs to be part of our decision making, is understanding the history of why they were excluded in the first place and the discussion perhaps in the legislature at that time.
Absolutely, and I think Stacey is listening to everything we're mm-hmm. saying and understands where we want to go, and maybe there's a reason not to include it, but if there is no good reason to exclude clergy, I think we would like to see something along that line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Can we go on?
I apologize for the confusion on Section 2. For the record, Bob Williams, Director of Educator and School Excellence. Section 3 amends the Alaska Statute 0965-160, Immunity for Good Faith Disclosure of Job Performance. It adds a Section B that extends immunity specifically for school districts to include job performance information on current or former employees pertaining to allegations of sexual abuse of a minor or sexual misconduct that had been substantiated through an administrative or judicial proceeding, including a plea of no contest with prospective employers. Section 4, 5, and 6, the Senate Bill 71 removes Alaska Statute 1433-100, the required crisis response planning from the training schedules for a collection of mandated trainings as prescribed under duties of school boards. These schedules require 50% of certificated staff in districts to be trained on included mandated trainings every 2 years, and that all certificated staff be trained every 4 years. This is going to be inserted later in the bill, and Todd Brocious will share that. But these trainings of AS 1433-100, they're best suited for trainings that are limited to certificated staff and for trainings that can be predictably be satisfied by training staff once every 4 years. And you'll see that this will bring crisis response in a different section at a different frequency. And I'll pass over to Todd Brocious.
Section 7 amends sexual abuse and sexual assault awareness and prevention training to add one small new element that is very significant. I believe it was addressed earlier, introduced earlier, and that's grooming behaviors. Section 7 would require that parents and teachers be provided information on the methods to identify the signs that an adult may be grooming a child for a romantic or sexual relationship with that child. And really, we know that this is a huge issue in Alaska. We know that through studies at UAA, 1 in 2 women report being the victim of physical and/or sexual violence. We know that that starts early. We have really compelling data through the Youth Risk Behavior Survey that indicates 8% of our students in high school report already having been the victim of sexual abuse. And we also know through the Office of Children's Services that this happens really early, that I know from in 2014 there were over 1,000 reports of suspected sexual child abuse, and the vast preponderance of those were among children ages 3 to 8. And so we really know that we need to collectively heighten awareness across the state. This is a really strategic way to begin to do that. At the department, we currently offer training on this topic to districts. We know that almost all districts utilize the department's current training resource. We can add this new information on grooming very seamlessly with a zero fiscal note and get it out quickly. We also anticipate that the department can produce brochures that can be delivered to parents at no cost to heighten their awareness and identify ways to also protect their children.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Is that the proper psychological term? I mean, the word groom seems a little light when, in fact, we're talking about, well, maybe it's the right term, but the psychologists agree that this is the terminology that should be used?
You know, I can't speak what the psychological term is. I would say that this is commonly used national nomenclature to describe this phenomenon. But there may be another term that could be utilized instead.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
With no other questions, we'll move on to Section 8. Section 8 amends Statute 1433-100, required crisis response planning, and it returns it to an annual requirement for all district staff. This is how the law was since its inception in 1999 until 2015. We really believe that returning it to an annual requirement is consistent with Alaska's long-term standard for crisis response training, and it really supports districts in being adequately prepared to respond to the many and the varied types of crises that present themselves in Alaska. We don't have to look back more than 2.5 weeks to see that we had a 7.9 Richter scale earthquake that could have resulted in a cataclysmic tsunami. We've had school lockdowns in Fairbanks or an active shooter situation. We simply know that in Alaska there's a high degree of readiness needed. We also are unique among states in that we have a significant number of schools that really operate in relative isolation in a way that you don't see elsewhere, and it's essential that our school staff be fully prepared to be the first responders and to hold down the fort until help can arrive. And so we see that this return to an annual training requirement would greatly improve school safety. questions on Section 8? Section 9 proposes a new law that would mandate training on child abuse and neglect for mandated reporters who do not work for the state or who do not work in school districts. Deputy Commissioner Forrest spoke to this section in her introduction. Are there questions on this section? Okay. Section 10 simply aligns statutory language to reflect that volunteers, those who work more than 4 hours a week, that's how it's defined in law, are mandated reporters, and therefore they would be required to receive training on mandated reporting. And districts could provide this either using the Department of Education's e-learning course that's currently heavily used, by creating something of their own, or also by using the Office of Children's Services online training that Deputy Commissioner Forrest also mentioned earlier.
Yes, please go ahead.
Section 11 would rename programs and activities developed or undertaken by districts to comply with AS 143356, which is the Dating Violence and Abuse Policy Training, Awareness, Prevention, and Notices, as BREEZE Law Programs and BREEZE Law Activities. Questions on?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Section 12 is a revisor's note to make a language change to AS 4717022. Section 13 proposes to make the renaming of BREEZE Law and BREEZE program activities under Sections 1 and 11 retroactive to June 30th of 2017. Section 14 proposes that Section 13 be effective immediately. And then finally, Section 15 proposes an effective date for all other sections of the bill to be January 1st of 2019.
We'll get to the question. Does that go? That gets through all the sections, right?
That does.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Section 10, we're requiring volunteers in the schools and to take the training. I'm wondering, do you know how it is determined whether a parent or community volunteer, what the criteria is as far as that fitting into this? Are all volunteers who come give time at the school going to be required? Just how is that determined? Just so we understand who in the community and the parents were required.
The chair, Senator Hughes, it is defined in law as anyone who's volunteering in the school more than 4 hours a week, and so it's kind of established by amount of time in the school setting.
Okay. Thank you. Follow up. I find that interesting because there could be someone that is, you know, simply doing paperwork or something like that that might not be interacting with the children. So, but I see where that they would have to establish some standard. So, thank you for that.
Thank you. So, how do others, parents or foster parents, if they chose to get this training, so they would know if their child is being abused, they have access to this training as well?
Chair Stevens, the Department of Education's resources are primarily targeted toward school district staff, and so the language in them is really geared toward that. Although we do have public seats available, and we would welcome parents to take our course, a better training for them that may speak to them more directly would be the Office of Children's Services version that's available at no cost online.
I see. Good. Thank you. And this does not include community athletic programs that are outside the school.
That's correct.
Thank you. Senator.
Does this apply to private schools?
Does
educators and folks at private schools and volunteers at private schools?
Yeah, good question.
Through the chair, I do believe that the mandated reporting or training does include private schools.
Thank you. Section 10, line 20. Page.
Through the chair. So each school district that provides training provides notice to to private schools located within that school district as to the availability of the training, and so they're invited to participate.
And as follow-up to that, so they're invited, but are they required? You said you believed so. Can you give us a sure definite on that if you're not sure at this point?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, so each school district that provides training under this section shall provide notice to public and private schools located in the school district of the availability of the training and require volunteers who are required to report child abuse and neglect to participate in the training. So they're required to provide notice.
Thank you, Senator Hughes.
So, yes, I understand they're required to provide notice. My question is, are the private school employees required to take the training, and are they mandatory reporters, I guess?
Through the chair, I would have to follow up on that as they reside out of our purview. I don't know that definitively.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you looking into that and getting back to us, if you will. Senator Giesler and then Senator Page.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just logically surmising the answer to Senator Hughes' question. If the teachers in a private school are certified, the Department of Education has jurisdiction over mandating the training for them. The same would be true of anyone practicing in the school with some kind of licensure.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, if they are certified, they would then be required to take the training. Now, in Alaska, there are four trainings that are required as a condition to have an Alaska teaching certificate, and this would fall within that.
Am I right that many teachers in private schools are not certified?
That's correct. That's true.
Thank you. Senator Begich and then Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brocious, has there been any identification of the potential costs that the additional training would have on school districts? I know that you have a zero fiscal note for the department, but have we considered the costs for school districts themselves, and how have you approached that?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that's a good question. So at current, and I'm not sure if you're speaking specifically to the changes in the sexual abuse and sexual awareness training that would require the grooming addition.
The training in terms of both the additional material and also in terms of the more frequent training.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, as far as the changes to the sexual abuse and sexual assault awareness prevention training, currently really all districts are utilizing the Alaska Department of Education's online training to comply with the law. So there would be no changes. There would be no additional cost to them. The department would absorb the cost for updating the training and provides it at no cost. In terms of responding to the increased frequency around required crisis response training, there could be a cost to districts. We don't know. It's been a really recent change. It was up until 2015, districts were required to deliver this training annually. And we don't know that from 2015 to present that there was a really significant change in practice. We don't know how many districts reduced the level of training that they provided. So it's possible that there could be a fiscal note for districts.
Just a brief follow-up. So in essence, what we're doing here is trying to get back to status ante, where, you know, basically that place where we were doing this annually. So there might be a way to measure that with the district.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that's correct. We could measure that.
Senator Hughes.
Yes, and just back to the private school question, as follow-up to the chair and to Senator Giesel's comment as far as certified teachers. So I guess the question, if you could bring back to us, is the non-certified teachers, the administrators in the private school, and the volunteers, you know, are they mandatory reporters, and would they be required? And then I'm also curious. We're switching from every year. It was briefly every 2 years. What kind of time requirement in follow-up for the districts and the teachers does it, the online training, is it like something you do in an hour? And we do have the added component of being able to identify things, so that might make the training a little bit longer. But just give us an idea of a person that is now required to take the training, whether in the school or outside the school, what kind of time is it going to take a person each year?
Through the chair. Senator Hughes, so in terms of the addition to the sexual abuse and sexual awareness prevention training that would add grooming, we really believe that through the department's online resource, we could add that additional information in just two, 3 minutes of content, frankly. And so it wouldn't significantly extend the burden on districts in terms of the time it would take to complete that training. And separately, the crisis response training is a training that each school really kind of tailors and individually develops and practices at that school level in the school setting. The department provides resources to help them frame and organize a crisis response training, but that's separate from the work of the department in large part, how it materializes or is implemented at the school level.
Yes.
And so my question then is for all those in the healing arts and those others that haven't been taking the training annually, what kind of time is this a 1 hour online course or for those that will be a new requirement?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I can only speak to the Department of Education's online course to meet this requirement is about 90 minutes long. There is a separate training delivered through the Office of Children's Services on mandated reporting of child abuse and neglect that I don't know the length of.
I think we have some information here. If you
For the record, my name is Tracy Sparts Campbell. I'm the Deputy Director for the Office of Children's Services. The online training through OCS is approximately 30 to 45 minutes. And what's nice about this training is it's something that you can stop and you can come back to. So you could do it in 15-minute increments or 10-minute increments if you needed to.
As a committee, do a field trip and spend 30 minutes observing that. We'll see if we can arrange that with you then.
Okay.
Yes, Senator.
Yeah, I would be interested in that. Have there been any discussions with any of those in the healthcare field that are going to be required to this as to their input and where they stand on this new requirement?
For the record, it's Tracy Sparts Campbell with OCS. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, at this point, we have not discussed with the medical professions on the OCS training.
Do you have a comment?
Oh, it's through the chair. So the department has provided technical assistance events with superintendents across the state in terms of overviewing this bill and discussing with them and during those conversations, there wasn't much articulated concern about the expansion of the 2 minutes worth of training for grooming.
Thank you. Before I go to Senator Coghill, is there any other agency that wishes to address this or any public testimony? I see we have Ms. Parody. I'd like to come make a comment. I'm going to have to leave in a couple of minutes. Senator Coghill will chair. But Senator Coghill, a comment?
Just for the school district, one of the reasons I think we went to every 2 years is because there were other mandatory trainings that were required early on in the year. Can you give us kind of the scope and the list of things that are required? And I think one of the questions we had last year was how do we collapse those into a single unit? Maybe you've made some progress on that. Could you help us understand that better?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, that's true. The training schedule was put together, and just to clarify those, so that for the trainings that are in the training schedule, they're actually required, so each certificated staff in a school district would only be required to receive the training once every 4 years. The requirement is that every 2 years, at least 50% of the staff have to be trained, and then by 4 years, all staff in the district need to be trained. It would actually just be once every 4 years. And there were a couple trainings that were put into that training schedule that didn't seem to be a natural fit. One was restraint and seclusion that really you just need a couple individuals in each school trained to do that. And so it was removed from this training cycle because it wasn't a perfect fit. And this required crisis response training was the other one that didn't seem to be a natural fit. Some of the trainings that do really align well to that schedule are training on gender and race equity, drug and alcohol disabilities, the sexual abuse and sexual assault training, suicide prevention, dating violence, and the child abuse and neglect are examples.
We still...
Thank you. Please recognize.
Well, no, that's the list. I'll yield to the other two.
Okay, we have, before we go on to Senator Begich, I just want to say before I leave that clearly there's enormous interest in this committee. There are a lot of questions we have. We hope there'll be, you'll come back with some response to us. I've been asked by Senator Hughes to include other agencies, and we'll certainly do that. So if we could go ahead then with Senator Begich, and then we'll go to Senator Giesel.
And before you leave, I just wanted to let you know, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I will be developing an amendment probably on the clergy issue just to bring back to the committee. I just wanted you to know that before you left.
Yeah, great. Senator, I appreciate that. If you'd work with Tim on it and work with the department. Very good.
And, Mr. Chairman, I am going to submit to you to forward to the Department of Commerce some questions related to other clinicians and providers that would be falling under this bill. I have some specific questions I'll forward to you.
Very good. All right. I think anybody else have a comment at this time? And I guess I'll ask Mrs. Paradis, she'd come forward, and I'll turn this over to Senator.
And I think, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we'll do is we'll just go ahead and take this public testimony. I think that was the extent of our public testimony, and we'll go ahead and gavel out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Paradis. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, representing superintendents, principals, elementary and secondary school business officials, and school administrators in Alaska. And briefly, I want to testify on Senate Bill 171, and thank you for your very thoughtful questions. Our members support the intent of this legislation, but agree with you that there are many things that need to be answered, and would specifically ask that the fiscal impact to school districts for implementation of what is in this bill be considered in your deliberations. And I know Commissioner Johnson, in a very recent communication to me, asked if the Alaska Superintendents Association would be willing to poll school districts with regard to that, and we'll look forward to sharing that information with you. Thank you.
There are a couple questions, but first comment. I remember we talked about this a year ago, and it we were still working on how to combine either some of those things, but everything from emergency management to lockdowns, the whole thing, were how to get those trains collapsed. And it sounds like they're working on it. I don't know that we're there yet. So,
Mr. Chairman, I think that was a question, but I would love to take an opportunity to respond to it. As you know, I am the voice of Please No More Additional Unfunded Mandates. That's me. Because our members are really feeling the pressure under the load of layers and layers and layers of unfunded mandates at a time where we need to be focused even more closely on the core mission of education. So I do appreciate Commissioner Johnson, who has a on-the-ground understanding of that pressure and has been working, I think, in the department to figure out how to lessen that responsibility on school districts. So I'm not sure that we're there, but I do think we're working on it in concert, and I appreciate your recognition of the fact that we don't want to add more there, particularly unfunded.
Senator Hughes, you had something, and Senator Begich.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and it sounds like the school districts, the education community is very aware of this bill, and they're kind of already doing it maybe every other year, and we're just adding a component. My concern, Mr. Chair, and my request is that we leave public testimony open, because we are now adding thousands of people requiring, and now we're having discussion about the clergy too, and I just feel like we need to get input from those, and so that's my request, is that we keep public testimony open.
I do not intend to close public testimony, and I certainly would yield to the chairman of the committee anyway. So at this point, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Paradis, last year We discussed unfunded mandates as well, and we want to see a list of those. We had hoped to see a list last year, and we didn't get one. So I'm wondering if you could provide that list of unfunded mandates for us. That'd be wonderful to have.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Begich, I will work with the department and provide that list. Thank you.
One of the things we'll be focusing on is certainly in one of the challenges was safety in schools. So how do we corral all the safety questions is going to be probably one of the questions that this bill will keep pushing the envelope on. So, Senator Hughes.
And an addendum to that request for unfunded mandates, if we could have broken out the in a really nice, concise list, the unfunded training mandates and you know, specific, whether it's so many hours or every year, every other year, that kind of thing, so we understand what all the training requirements are that we have are unfunded.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hughes, again, we'll work with the department to provide that information. I would say that it's my belief and our members' belief that core to who they are as educators is prioritizing safety of every student every day, that isn't something that they need a federal law to encourage them to do. And I recognize the importance of these laws, as do my members, but I do want to reassure you that I have every confidence every day that the highest priority for every one of my members and teachers in Alaska is the safety of their students. And I know you appreciate that.
That's a good note to end on.
Thank you.
Thanks to the department, and obviously questions have come up. We'll look forward to further information coming to the committee, and we'll let the regular chairman handle them as he moves forward with that. This committee will adjourn.